Here we go, we're back once again. Hey. Welcome everybody to another episode of the Rugby Scoop Podcast. I'm not by myself, I am joined by my lovely crew. It's sunny in Amsterdam, by the way, gents. Very happy to be experiencing some good weather, even though it's still single digits. It's good to see some sun after a very long time. I'm joined by Vickers. I'm joined by Hugh, the stats man. I'm joined by Mr. Heatwave, all the way in Bloemfontein. Vuyo, how's things going that side?
Yeah, mate, you talk about sun. Yeah, today we managed to get some. Jesus, it's been crazy. Crazy weather. On Friday, we had a first session in the morning. Nothing, like, it was just cold. And then went inside, had a little bit of rest, meeting. When we came out, snow was everywhere.
No way.
Oh, my God. Jesus. But anyway, everything is good. Yeah, enjoying life. No worries.
Four seasons in one day. Hugh, how are things that side?
It's a beautiful day today. I went for a walk earlier. April's a funny month in the UK because in the day you maybe have 10 hours, 11 hours of beautiful sunshine, but you're guaranteed 1 hour of rain every day. But at the moment, it's a bit chilly, but it's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, I see Jade was laughing at me when I said we're enjoying some sun this side. But apparently in Bloemfontein, all things are warm. Jade, how are things that side?
Good, bro. Good. I mean, Grey College just beat Bochum yesterday. So once again, Grey is the number one school in South Africa. So yeah, everything's well in Bloemfontein. You know, after Grey wins Bochum, we have the big game like that. Bolton prices come down, brandy prices come down, the specials at the liquor stores, everything. So yeah, everything's good in Bloemfontein.
Fair enough. Vuyo, anything interesting in Russia, rugby-wise, or anything social happening that side?
Yeah, look, nothing much at the moment. We're still sanctioned, so we can't really play internationally. It's quite sad. You know what's quite sad is the fact that the Russian ladies team was number 5 in the world when the sanctions happened. And most of those girls now have actually stopped playing rugby. They've just gone to, work, or if they're studying, they continue with their studies. So it is quite sad that they've lost that group of players that was actually quite competitive within the World Series. Yeah, and as a men's team, well, I was appointed 2022 when all of this started, and I haven't had one game to say that, okay, I've coached the team. I've just been holding camps, and their first opportunity might come up now in July, where we've been invited by China, and everything looks good for now until, obviously, once we start discussing funding.
Oh, nice, man. Yeah, at least some light at the end of that tunnel. So hopefully things go well in that regard. And yeah, so hopefully things change as well within the Russian sporting element as well. From my side, I mean, we had a very busy weekend. I couldn't get time to watch a lot of the URC matches. So my club, there was a future class team that was playing in the semi-final yesterday. So last week we played a quarter-final. We won against a club called Khoi. And then yesterday we played one of the big clubs called the Hague Rugby Club. It was an away game. I mean, half-time, guys, we were trailing 19-0 or 17-0. I think until like the 60th minute. We managed to claw our way back to a 2017 win. Last kick penalty. Pierre got the kick over, which was amazing. I was actually shouting at the boys to go for touch and score a try. But yeah, so it's quite difficult to pass on those messages in such a tense environment. But yeah, congratulations to the Rotterdam Future Class team. Now we're in the finals. The finals are in May. Just exciting times for the club as well. I mean, the first team is in the is in the top four, so they're also fighting for home semi-final, like I said last week. Now the second team, or the future class team, is now in the finals, which is great. The third team won their division as well. So yeah, I mean, the top three sides really playing finals footy. The club is really growing in leaps and bounds, and we plan to make it a great success in the Netherlands as well. So yeah, that's what's been happening this past weekend on my side. Hugh, your side, besides rugby, anything exciting?
Not really, I'm afraid. I won't take up time on the podcast trying to think of something. I can't really think of anything non-rugby related exciting that's happening.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Jade, the liquor prices are going up tomorrow. So, yeah, save some save some cash. But anyway, guys, news making headlines this past week. Obviously, Jordy Barrett at Leinster next season. We'll chat about that later. You have Johan Ackermann. He's expressed his desire to coach in South Africa again after stints in abroad in England and Japan. That's pretty interesting. I mean, I wonder which country he will go to, I mean, which club he will go to. Women's Six Nations is also underway. I mean, they're in week four right now, but the results that took place yesterday, England thumped Ireland 88-10. I will repeat that, guys. 88-10. That's a massive scoreline. Scotland beat Italy 17-10 as well. And I think there's a game with Wales and France that's kicking off right now as we speak. But yeah, guys, without wasting any time, we've got Super Rugby. We've got URC. A lot to talk about in URC. We'll talk about what's happening in Leinster as well, being the royalty club that it is. And yeah, so a lot to dissect, but let's kick it off, Jade. Super Rugby this past weekend, Rob Penny and the Crusaders. Talk to me. What is happening in New Zealand?
Yeah, let's start with Rob Penny and Dumini, you know, the coaches of Crusaders and the Islanders. And I mean, they've been on a show this season, the both of them. I mean, we had a preview on Pirates Rugby Podcast and we both talked up the Islanders and they'd have a stellar season, or at least a decent solid season. But yeah, both of those clubs, both of those franchises are struggling with attack and defense. They're struggling to put any sort of game plan together, taking nothing away from the Force yesterday. I thought the Force was brilliant yesterday. I thought that was one of the better games they played. A few of the Aussie pundits stated that, you know, that was the Force's best performance ever in Super Rugby since they joined the competition. But yeah, I mean, the Force beat them at the breakdown. They beat them, their rush defense. The Crusaders had no answer for it. Scoop, if you... I'm going to make 2 points quickly here, but if you look at what the Canes and the Blues are doing and the way they're evolving the game, I mean, taking a lot out of the box, a leaf out of the box book, where they're looking at, you know, meters, post-contact meters, and, you know, dominating collisions, looking at getting post-contact meters, sitting up there, not throwing your 50-50s, you know, keeping the ball, setting up play, ruck speed. I mean, that's something that the Boks did and they were successful at. And looking at what Clark Laidlaw and Van Cotter, you know, they brought towards the Canes and the Blues this season, those are the two teams that was doing that, dominating up front, dominating collision, dominating the breakdown. But when you look at the Highlanders and the Crusaders, they're nowhere in terms of that. You know, they're not, they try 50-50 pass, they try to razzle-dazzle, but they can't get it right. They're weak on defense, they soft shoulders, you know, they're losing balls in contact. Guys like Joe Moody, Owen Franks, 5 meters from the try line, when the Force is down to 14 men, you know, coming in from the side, killer coach killing mistakes that they're doing. And I mean, that's so un-Crusader-like, especially. And it made me think, and I want to direct this question at you as well, and this point is to you as well, because I mean, you're a Crusaders fan. So when you're looking at the setup of the Crusaders, right, and how they started and where they came from. So Crusaders always started being a big, you know, Canterbury. The Canterbury was the main region in that franchise until Tasman started to come along, especially with Leon McDonald's influence there, and started to win a few NPCs. And then you had, you know, the Tasman-Canterbury split. And I mean, for years under Ethan Blackadder, they underachieved, even though the team there, not Ethan, Todd Blackadder, they underachieved. But they had big names. I mean, every season they couldn't just win and get over the line. And then Razor came in and he went back old school Crusaders, you know, the Wayne Smith, Robbie Deans philosophy, and he brought that into that club and installed it. But now I'm looking at this team and I'm looking at the makeup of this team compared to the other teams, right? If you look at this team, there's so many. There's a 50-50 split between Tasman and Canterbury. And I'm thinking now, with all of those senior players who were Crusader boys through and through, I mean, with those Sam Whitelocks, Richie Mwangas, those guys out, I'm thinking in terms of the leadership, in terms of, you know, the continuity of the squad, the terms of the you know, the camaraderie within the squad, I think I can see a split between Canterbury and Tasman in this team. And you can see it in terms of the leadership group. You can see it in terms of maybe there's a few clicks. You know, if you look at that backline, that whole backline is a Tasman backline. Bar, maybe the Flyoff, who comes from, I think he's a Northland Flyoff. But I mean, if you look at Macca Springer, Levi Moore, Sebo Rees, they're all Tasman boys. And you're looking at the pack, majority of them are Canterbury boys. So I'm thinking you can sit with the same situation that the Cats sat with back in the day, you know, with Lions in the Free State. So especially when your team's not doing well, those small things come in. And do these players buy into Rob Penny's philosophy? What is his philosophy in terms of the Crusaders? Where, you know, Razor went back and he was staunch Crusader. He brought back that old Crusader camaraderie, that old Crusader spirit, everything. But now with Rob Penny there, I think these cracks are there. And the more this team lose, the more you see this in this Crusaders team. I'm not sure if I'm correct or not, but I mean, this could also, we could also look at an angle in terms of this, you know, the Tasman and the Canterbury makeup of this team maybe is too big for Rob Penny to handle.
Oof. Yeah, I think that's an interesting observation to have. I think, I mean, Rob Penny has been part of the Crusader setup previously. This is not his first rodeo in Canterbury. From my take, I mean, I've been watching now the Crusaders for a very long time, right? And I just think Rob Penny has his own philosophy, but that philosophy is not really sticking, or it's not really being appreciated, or maybe the players are not buying into the particular style. I mean, if you watch the Crusaders and you just dissect their style of play, right? They've moved away from the simple old school 1-3-3-1 formation, roughly, for example. I mean, if you look at Sivu Rees, he's working from one side of the touchline all the way to the other side of the touchline. Not to say he hasn't done that before, but if you look at the setup, he makes more carries than the flankers in that team, right? Your flankers are supposed to, or your ball carriers are supposed to be the ones that win you or gain you advantage in terms of going over the advantage line, giving you good go forward. Sivu Rees seems to be the only player that's doing this. You look at the Christies, for example, he's been playing and he's been part of the Crusader setup for a very long time now, right? Yes, there might be missing some leadership in terms of Cody Taylor, in terms of Barrett as well. I can see that there's no leadership in that team. They've got All Blacks, but they don't have leadership. And that also stems from the coaching staff. I mean, remember, if you go back to our conversations about the Sharks and how the Sharks looked, Crusaders are in the same predicament at this point in time. And at some point, Rob Penny needs to either have a proper sit down with his coaching staff first and find a good way, a good way to move forward with this team, and obviously simplify things as much as possible. Like you said, throwing 50-50 passes. I mean, guys, at this level, literally at this level, 50-50 pass. Jeez, those are real coach killers for me. Isolated ball carriers, losing ball. I mean, the amount of times the Crusaders entered the forces 22, I think it's more than, it's hitting double figures, if I'm not mistaken. But what did they come away with? Nothing most of the time. Probably 30% of the time that was converted into points. And the other 70% was either a knock-on, turnover, or lost a line out. And I'm like, guys, at this level, it's worse than my future class team, to be honest. Really. I mean, that's how bad the Crusaders are at this point in time. And people, there's no accountability. Maybe that's also another element, situation or something that's also taking part. No one is being responsible. Because at this point in time, if this was a football team, Rob Penny would be out of his job, if we are being honest.
Not a football team. Let's say if this was a non-New Zealand team, Rob Penny would be out of this job because New Zealand just don't like to fire coaches, you know. And for me, this is disastrous, you know. With Clark Doom, is it Clark Doomany at the Highlanders? You can still understand. They don't have the player pool. I mean, they're really thin of and short of play. Yes, but I mean, yes. I'm sure they will review him at the end of the season. But I mean, Rob Penny, I mean, like I think it was Jamie Wall that said, he can say thank you to Ian Foster, you know, in the way they handled Ian Foster, because New Zealand do not fire coaches.
Mm. Fair enough, fair enough. But anyway, moving along from the Crusaders, Vickers, maybe you can chime in. Which game did you watch? And obviously, what are your thoughts within the Super Rugby competition at this point in time?
Yeah, so I'll just touch a little bit on the Crusaders, what you guys are speaking about. In terms of coaches, the one thing that teams do have when coaches are within their setup is the culture of the coach, the culture that the coach drives. So if the people that are within the system understand how the coach works and how the coach likes to do his things, what happens is everyone gets a buy-in and everyone follows what the coach is wanting, because the coach is the main driver of the culture. And then because the coaches do almost like upskill the leadership group to be driving that culture within the players, then it becomes a trickled effect from the top to the bottom, from the bottom to the top. So with what is happening with the Crusaders, what you guys are talking about is probably there's a breakdown of the culture within the system. And the problem with that is that the problem with that is that the guys that are coaching there, obviously, I haven't followed New Zealand rugby for quite some time. Were they part of the coaching staff before? And do they understand the culture of the Crusaders? Because if you guys remember, Crusaders is one team that always put out their culture out in the public. They wanted better people than better rugby players. And that's why, if you notice, most of the players that they had weren't really flashy guys, I mean, until obviously the Mwangas, but the guys were pretty simple in their jobs. They did their basics right. They did everything that was required of the game. And that's why they selected those players, because of the culture was talking to them. And is that the question now? Is that what's happening now? That's one thing that we need to think about. And then secondly, a team culture, what I've seen with Crusaders is that they never considered more tries, and that was one of their biggest driving forces behind their pride on the of the badge. And for the first time, I saw like the guys were just driving them willy-nilly, and that's not normal. And then also within that, the Crusaders were normally offloading team. They weren't really that bad, but they knew the moment they hit the 22 and the red, what we call the red or green zone, they were so clinical in that area. And so, which brings me back to my point of the culture, what is happening within the culture of the team. The other game I watched, was Blues versus Brumbies. Oh my gosh! Even Jade said it. It was a terrible Brumbies team. I don't know what happened, and I feel for Stephen Larkham, because that kind of performance, every time they got close to the 22, not inside, close to the 22, there was either a turnover or there was a handling error or there was something. Someone did something stupid, and the Blues were just picking up scraps and making sure they make them pay. So, yeah, I think just those are my points on Super Rugby. I didn't watch most of the games, guys, sorry. But I watched the Blues and obviously the Crusaders game.
No, fair enough, fair enough. And all the way in England. Hugh?
Yeah, I watched most of Crusaders Force. I seem to have a knack at the moment of picking the worst game to watch. The only player, I messaged Jade this, I think, the only competent player, the only player who had any idea what he was doing on that pitch was Ben Donaldson. I think everybody else was a complete mess. Jade has spoken about it before in the past, about Havili in the number 10 jersey for Crusaders just isn't doing what the 10 needs to do. So, you know, my team, the Scarlets, we have a selection of number 10s, and Sam Costello is Wales's first choice 10. And when he plays for us, the difference he makes for us, directing us around the field, making good decisions, giving structure, you see the impact of what a good 10 can have on a team compared to when you're having 10s that are maybe not at the standard that they need to be. The one slack I will cut Rob Penny, and this is something that people like Gainline Analytics talk about all the time, the amount of stuff that has changed in the Crusaders, like not even the kit supplier is the same. Like they're wearing different kits, different coaches, different players all over the place. So I think you've just got to give them this season to get through it and then judge them on next season. But you know, one thing that you can also say is the underlying stats are pretty bad across the board for the Crusaders. They're bottom, third bottom, second bottom of everything. So it's not a pleasant time being a Crusaders fan. But you know what? 7 titles in a row, you can just take it for a year. How about that? I don't think I watched many other games apart from that, so I can't really speak about too much else. Obviously, the Blues Brumbies game, obviously, just completely one-sided. The Reds, I want to get your guys' thoughts on the Reds, though, because I can't decide whether the Reds are good or not. Is it just they're good at home and they're terrible away? They seem to just be, a lot of people were giving, is it Les Kiss, their coach, yeah, was giving him a lot of credit? But
they seem to be a strange team currently. Yeah. One weekend, they're really blowing your mind away with some good football. And then the next weekend, it seems like the wheels come off for some weird reason. But yeah, this weekend, I mean, they really played well against a very terrible Highlanders team. I mean, they were very structured. They had a very good, very, very good defense. And they seem, I mean, what I've noticed with the Australian teams, there's a lot of inside passes that are coming through and a lot of short passes that are coming through, or tip passes, if you prefer. And it's something that's changed the way, or maybe the whole Australian rugby has basically just changed the way they do things now, with the introduction, obviously, of Joe Schmidt. There's maybe some intel or information that's been passed through on, hey, New Zealand teams maybe struggle with inside passes, or maybe with their pillars, which is something that has always been a problem for New Zealand, even in the early 2000s, around the ruck or around the breakdown. I mean, if you watch Australian teams from a set piece, from the breakdown, there's a lot of maybe 1-2 phases, and then there'll be an inside pass, someone running at full speed, coming at an angle, and they'll gain meters from that. And I see a lot of that with the Reds. I've seen it over the past couple of weeks, and I think Les Kiss obviously also understands the way to kind of like play against New Zealand teams. Maybe not against Hurricanes and the Blues, but obviously against the Highlanders, Crusaders. They basically seem to be making their strides in that effect. But with Reds, I'm really not sure. Maybe we'll see if they make quarterfinals or playoffs. Let's see how far they can go in this competition. But they've definitely improved under Les Kiss. That's one thing I can say. That's one positive that I've seen from them this season so far. I don't know what Jade thinks about the Reds.
No, guys, I'm going to be brutally honest in terms of Super Rugby. And there's two good teams here and one team that can beat anybody in this day. So you have the Canes, the Blues, and then you have the Chiefs that can beat anybody on the day, you know, depending what happens on that day. But the other teams are behind. The Reds, yeah, what they tend to do, and the Australian teams are doing, is when they get into your red zone now, they speed up play and they come away with points. You know, the execution rate in your red zone is, so when you're on defense, is kind of high. But then again, they can't play away from home. None of those Australian teams can play away from home. You'll see the weekend, the Rebels will go to the Crusaders and the Crusaders will beat them in Christchurch, because the Australian teams are struggling to play away from home. The Crusaders, the Highlanders struggle to play away from home. The Drua struggles to play away from home. The only two teams that do it, that wins home and away, that is the Canes and the Blues. And that says a lot about their game plan and where they are in terms of the other teams. That's why I said I won't write off the Chiefs, But for me, those are the two teams that are standing out. I mean, they're really worth note to watch. I mean, even the weekend when the Canes played against the Drua wasn't an easy game. I mean, that crowd in Fiji was outstanding. It was the highlight of the weekend, seeing that crowd in Fiji. The Drua came at them that whole second half. The Canes stood firm. And, you know, it was a hiding at the end of the day. And also look at the changes the Canes made. They basically played the second pack against Fiji. But yeah, for me, I really see this as these three championship teams that can win this team, and the rest is all they're making up places. I do not see them going away from home in the quarterfinals and knocking the Canes or the Blues or the Chiefs or maybe the Brumbies or so, unless the Crusaders somehow make the top eight. They're the one team that can do it on their day because they know how to do it, but the rest of them, I don't see them winning away from home, guys.
Was it a doubleheader in Fiji with the women's team as well in the morning?
Yeah.
They've made the final of Super W, haven't they?
Yeah, it was a doubleheader. It was a doubleheader, yeah. So that's why they moved the game to Friday and had an evening game.
Gosh, what a great event that must have been.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Fiji Drua are so frustrating to watch at the moment. You're like, just do something normal. They just seem to love making life hard for themselves. You know, we said that the Fiji national team under Ryan Lewis was starting to bring that structure and that execution to their game, but the Drua just seemed to, I don't know, like their post-contact meters, and this is the case for Fiji national team as well, post-contact meters are probably the best of anyone in the world, like absolutely unbelievable, but just always make doing it the hard way. Just, I'm like, let the ball do the work, guys, you know, just go through a few phases, just have a five-phase plan of what you're going to do, and do that, just have a bit of structure to the game. I know maybe this is just not the way they want to do it, but come on.
I can imagine the frustration. Before we jump into URC, Jade, anything you would like to share regarding obviously the Auckland Blues? I mean, for me, that was the blockbuster match. That was the game everybody wanted to see over the weekend. And obviously, seeing what happened last year, Larkham took a second string side to play, I think it was either Auckland Blues or Chiefs or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. But this time around, he brought his full squad. And it was strength versus strength from both teams. And obviously, the weather conditions were not really ideal. But the way Vern Carter has given direction to this Auckland Blues team, the way they are so physical, and they've completely changed the whole approach of playing typical New Zealand rugby, inverted commas. And I hope Ian Foster was not sleeping while watching the Auckland Blues against the Brumbies, because that rugby tends to bore him every now and again. But I mean, I'm really thoroughly impressed by the fact, or by the way the Auckland Blues are playing. I mean, direct, confrontational. I mean, Tui Polotu, how many carries does he make in a game? And he played 80 minutes, right? It's incredible to see. And it's very good, obviously, for New Zealand, because now he comes back with a whole lot of experience. And he's definitely walking into that All Blacks team as the starting lock. There's no question about that. But how good is Vern Carter currently? And the Auckland Blues.
Yeah, no, look, their forward play, their close contact play has been unbelievable this season. I mean, they picked up, you know, from last season. I mean, they've all been known as a team, you know, to play with the big pack of forwards that they have. But I mean, you look at the work that, I mean, a lazy bugger like Akira Ione is doing off the ball, and you look at him and you say he's pulling finger. I mean, he's getting involved in tackles, he's carrying strong. And then you look at Hoskins Tutu, I mean, what he's doing, I mean, he's cooking. he's cooking. So, yeah, I think that whole team, if you look at the tries they scored, I mean, there wasn't a try scored out wide. Everything was in close contact. And I mean, it was Caleb Clark, his work rate. I saw last week, Caleb Clark was on the Coco show with Drew Mitchell and Matt Gitto. And they had his run meters up there. So in six rounds of Super Rugby, he had about 550 run meters.
He looks a lot He looks like he's in the gym.
He does. Because he went into camp with, I think, as the Rabios in rugby league. And he went into camp with him the whole off-season. And that's where he lost a lot of weight. He shed a lot of weight. But, I mean, his run meters, his work he's doing off the ball, his work rate, both him and Talia. I think they're in a good space at the moment. And I think we'll see in a few weeks' time when they play the Canes. I mean, can they play this game against the Canes? Because, I mean, the Canes is also very physical at the breakdown. So we'll see. But for now, I'm glad with the way Cotter did it, with the way they're going on. I wouldn't mind, you know, them ending second and not first, depending on where the Crusaders end. But, yeah, so that for me, I'm going on, and I'm enjoying this Blues thing. I'm enjoying it. Yeah, it's not exactly 96, 97, but I mean, we can still dream, and I think we'll be in the final this season.
It's not 2003 either with Carlos.
Yeah, not 2003.
Fair enough, fair enough. Now, gents, we move on to URC. A lot of upsets. What on earth is going on? Hugh, I'm starting with you on this one. Your favorite team, the best team in the world, or the best club in the world, the Blue Bulls from Pretoria. Jake White says Munster have the right recipe for beating South African teams in South Africa. What happened to the...
Signing loads of South Africans, you mean? Oh, sorry. It's just Argay Simon, really, isn't it? That was mean.
But yeah, the Blue Bulls, tell me, what happened?
Hurston got sent off. I messaged both you and Jade during the game. I was like, I think I owe this guy an apology. You know, he's playing really well. And then he gets sent off. So, apology rescinded. I'm not sorry. Just complacency. Just complacency. And if you don't talk complacency, we'll talk about the Stormers in a bit. But, like... It's just, if you never lose at home, you just think, oh, we don't really have to work from it. At some point, we'll just beat these. But Munster turns up. They got that incredible second row, possibly the best second row pairing in club rugby of Tadhg Byrne and Argay Snyman. And then they got Tom Ahern on the bench. So for people who don't know Tom Ahern, watch out for this guy, okay? 6'9", but he's got the pace of a winger. They use him on the edge as an edge forward. If you look at his meters that he makes per game, per carry, unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And it's because he's got the pace to play out on the wing. And Munster got it right. Conor Murray was playing on one leg, but managed to just marshal the game well enough. They got Ollie Jaeger to come off the bench. We know all about him. It was a great matchup. Once you saw the teams that had been named for the game, and you saw the lineups, you're like, this could be good. I did think that when obviously Hurston had got sent off and Willy LaRue stepped up, but they subbed Willy LaRue off about 5 minutes later. I thought that was a mistake. I don't see why they brought him off and brought Chris Smith on, and Chris Smith didn't do a lot for me. So yeah, and I think Munster's pack just managed to stand up. They used the 6-2 split. I'm a big fan of the 6-2 split, and they used it expertly in order to counteract the fatigue that you get from playing at altitude. And just, you got to say fair play to Graham Rowntree and the Munster coaches, got it right. Jake White has had a bad week.
Definitely. No, 100%. I agree with that. But my thing with Munster is that they've found, like, I also agree with the sentiments that Jake's shared post-match, that Munster have really found a good recipe to play against SA teams. And the way the Munster forwards, guys, do a lot of dirty work. My goodness. I mean, those boys are grafting and grafting, ruck after ruck, phase after phase. And then you get, who is it, Crowley and Conor Murray with the boot to actually give them... territory. Amazing. Really, really I'm really, really amazed at the fact that they really don't play the expansive game that everyone is expecting, but they really know how to graft and graft and graft and literally go into the dark. What is it called? The dark areas.
That's Munster's DNA. Munster are not a flashy team. They're trying to change their identity, or at least their fans are, to say that they're a running rugby team, and they can score a nice try every now and again. That Munster's identity, Munster's DNA is carrying tight, unflashy rugby. And you know what? It works. I don't hate it.
No, it does. It definitely does. Vickers, your thoughts? Blue Bulls monster.
Yeah, look. Yeah, you like, yes, guys, it's something very sad for Jake, obviously, because he went out in the media and protected his selection against Northampton. And then he basically lost the game now that he was probably saying that we're going to try and win this one. So it is a little bit tough for a coach. And like Jake, like you have said, it's been a tough week. I think it's been a tough 2 weeks, to be honest. But, when you're off, when you are off, you have a bye of a weekend. The interesting part is, how do you approach training that week? Is it a recovery week? Is it a training week of what we're going to do in our next game? Whereas I feel a lot of times when you come off training weeks, off bye weeks, you always start slower because you were too relaxed within the week that you were leading up to the game, to your bye weekend. And instead of smashing the guys within that week and then getting the recovery week within your game week. So it's a matter of how did they approach it and how did Munster approach it. I thought Zeebo was brilliant yesterday. I thought Zeebo played very well. I haven't seen Zeebo play like that actually at 15, especially at 15. So I think it's just they came out with the right recipe and they executed it perfectly. And you guys, like you guys have mentioned, those forwards are workhorses. They literally worked everything in that field and they didn't give anything to the Bulls. Yes, Jake will talk about the players, the three big players that were missing, but I don't think it was that. I honestly don't think it was that. I think they were, even if those players were there, they were dominated clearly, clean. I think it was a clear dominance from Munster. And I commend Munster and I reiterate that they are the current URC champions. So we can't forget that.
True. That is very true. They are currently champions. Doesn't matter where they are on the current standings of...
They could finish top now. They've got a chance to finish top. They need to rely on Leinster to lose. I think, is it Stormers next? Bloody hell, what a game that's going to be.
They're travelling down to Cape Town.
Yeah, they're going down to Cape Town. And then I think Leinster have got two home games left. I think one of those is against Ulster. So they should win that. Glasgow have got a great chance of finishing top, although they've still got two games in South Africa to go.
You know, I've just been looking at the log. It's crazy how this log is. Then Benetton, who's on 42 points, are number five. Then you get the next team, who's on 40 points. Yeah, I think it's number six. And number seven is also on 40 points. And then everyone else, till the Lions, is all on 39 points. That's basically like a game. That's like literally a game. If you lose a game now, it's going to put you in a difficult position. And, I mean, if you look at Ulster, Lions, who else? Connacht, 9 points, and they're all gunning for that eighth spot. And the team on eighth spot is actually on 39 points as well. So it's crazy how this is going to finish. And actually, interesting 2 weeks to go.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And if you look at who's still got to travel to South Africa, well, the assumption was that you lose both games in South Africa, but obviously Munster and Ospreys have disproved that. So Bulls, it's a massive missed opportunity. They've still got plenty of home games left. Three of their four games that are left are home games, and their other game is still in South Africa. I think it's against Sharks, I want to say. I'll have to double check. But massive missed opportunity for both the Stormers and the Bulls this weekend. Edinburgh have got a good chance. They've already played down south, as have Connacht and Ulster. Lions as well. They beat Leinster. Lions have got a great chance of making the playoffs. They haven't got to go back up north, and they've got three home games. They don't bet against the Lions to get to the playoffs is my pick.
Fair enough, fair enough. Jade, did you also catch the Blue Bulls and Munster?
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to tell you guys that, a few months ago, Scrumming Flyoff tweeted that Glasgow would be the dark horses in this URC and they could win it. And I mean, look where they're sitting now on the log. So my mate's scrubbing fly off, you know, he didn't tweet it with a brandy in his hand. He was thinking of something there. He was onto something. But yeah, I watched the game yesterday and I was actually a little bit disappointed at the Bulls in terms of, you know, their own attitude towards the game. Yes, like you said, Munster came at them in that first 20 or 30 minutes and the first half especially, and they were the better team. They had to score a few more points and score a few more tries. But, I mean, they still got a foothold in the game, and they took the lead in the second half. And from there, you would expect the Bulls with the Loftus altitude and, you know, with the crowd at the behind them at Loftus, you'd expect them now to go and kill off the game, because, I mean, that could be a big slip for them in terms of where they finish on the log. So it could actually be a difference between a home semi-final or a home quarter-final example. So, yeah, for me, that Jake White would be upset with that, because he did also put all his eggs in one basket, you know, the week before, and he said now he's focusing on this game. But so did Munster. And if you look at the way, I mean, Connor Murray rolled back the years yesterday. What a display at number 9. I mean, that was one of the best number 9 displays I've seen in the URC for quite some time. I can't say in the world, because then everybody would start putting the pond clips up here, left, right, and center. But yeah, in a long, long time, I've seen it. And I mean, actually, well done, team. I mean, he was awesome yesterday. Zeebo, when I saw him, like, is Simon Zeebo still playing? I thought he's just, you know, backup. You know, I thought, but really to see him play and to play like that at against the Bulls. I mean, Bankerville, the pack. Dennis Byrne, Erge Snyman, and those guys, you know, they really stood up. But one thing, guys, you know, that's irritating me, and we saw it yesterday, and I get irritated with referees. Why, when the ball's at the back of the scrum and you see the heat, the props, the prop is getting, the opposing props is getting heat, and you can see they're buckling, why does he call the 9 to use the ball? Why don't they give the advantage? Because there was a few situations yesterday where the Bulls, you know, they had the ball there, and the way they played, they brought on Akka and a few, I think it was Volko Lowe, they brought on from the bench. So they had Munster under pressure, you know, at scrum time a few times. But then you get the referee calling, use it, 8, use it. I mean, give them the advantage. Let them get the second shove on. I mean, they can milk a penalty and get territory upfield. So that's actually a very, you know, in terms of world rugby, I don't like that rule. I don't like the rule where they're forcing the 8 to play the ball if it's at his feet. The second shove can still come, you know. Let the scrum go through. Let give advantage to the prop that they're dominating. But yeah, that was my thoughts on the game yesterday. A little bit gutted that the Bulls lost, because I really backed them as a South African team. But yeah, I mean, well done to Munster. Like Vuyo said, I mean, they are the champions after all.
Yeah, people in South Africa were talking about a sweep again, but clearly the sweep didn't come. How's about the Ospreys? Hugh, talk to me.
Should I talk about the Ospreys or should I talk about the Stormers? Because I have things to say about the Stormers.
Both.
Ospreys, incredible, unbelievable result to win down in Cape Town for a Welsh region. That's just not supposed to happen. Ospreys, you can check. I've got the receipts. Check my tweets before the season. I said this Ospreys squad should be making the playoffs every season. So if they make the playoffs in 7th, I'm not going to praise them, because they always should have been in that position. It shouldn't have been a challenge. But bonus point win against a pretty star-studded Stormers team. You can't take anything away from them. They've got this player, Harry Deeves, that I know a lot of people are excited about. If you listen to him getting interviewed, you wonder if he's okay. He's not quite all there, but he just loves playing rugby and he's amazing at playing rugby. So fair play to him. They're getting a bit of cohesion in. Out of all of the Welsh regions, they make the fewest changes to their starting 15. So they've played together a lot. They've got a great understanding. And Toby Booth is getting the best out of them. They're playing to Ospreys' DNA. Ospreys' DNA is forward-orientated, set-piece-orientated, scrum, line-out. That's their go-to. Everything else is an add-on. And I think they were the perfect matchup for the Stormers, because the Ospreys take very few risks. They kick, they go to their set piece, and they score the majority of their tries either from driving lineouts or from capitalising on mistakes. So you saw one try came from a terrible cross kick from Manny Lebok. You saw another try came, I think, from a charge down. I'll have to double check. And just pouncing on mistakes, turnovers, intercepts, this is what the Ospreys thrive off, and that is what the Stormers give you. If you talk about styles make fights, stylistically, this was a perfect matchup for the Ospreys. For the Stormers, again, go back and listen to previous episodes of the Scoop Pod. If you hear the guy speaking not with a South African accent, that's me, you'll hear him say the Stormers are due to get found out by someone because they take such crazy risks. I don't understand it. And for me, Dobson, the coach, has got questions to answer here because they've got the pack, they've got the players to play any game plan that they want. And if one doesn't work, they can go tight. Do you remember what they did to Stade Français in the Champions Cup where they took them to the cleaners up front? Why don't they do that every week? They could do that to anybody and then let the backs do the razzle-dazzle, the Lebox, the Willemses, the Chalants. Do all that then. But no, they just want to throw it around crazy from minute one. And this defeat, this embarrassing defeat, has been in the post. It's been coming because they just refuse to play structured rugby. They refuse to play sensible rugby, play the percentages, and they just rely on the Lebox and the Willemses to have two moments of magic per game and see them across the victory line. And it was due to not work. It was due to fail. And yeah, what a massive game against it, Leinster it is next week, because if they lose that, two games at home, defeats in a row, in fact, that would be three in a row, wouldn't it? Because they lost to La Rochelle. This is a team that's only ever made the finals in the URC. Questions to be answered.
Very, very important, very good points you bring out there, Hugh. Vickers, listening to what Hugh has just said, throwing the ball around, 50-50 passes, this is the exact same thing we were complaining about earlier in the pod, talking about the Crusaders. It's also evident in the Stormers' game plan. Obviously, looking at where they're sitting in the sixth spot this season, Stormers were usually top two, top three, or one at times. Since the start of URC rugby, are teams now getting used to the Dobson philosophy, structure, plan? Are teams now ready to face the Stormers' unorthodox way of playing? Tell me, Vickers.
Yeah, so I'll start with the first point with Jade just made about the scrumming where the ball is an eighth man. Remember, Jade, those kind of things are only to stop the Springboks from being able to get the penalties. So that's why they created that rule. So
that's true. They just want to make sure.
They just want to make sure that the box don't get those penalties in crucial games. Anyway, moving on. Look. It's funny how in 2024, people are starting to realize that the game plan that the Stormers are playing, it's been high risk since the beginning. It's been high risk. And I've been saying this with a mate of mine that I used to watch. He was working with me. He used to watch rugby together. And we called it a vur-vur game. The Stormers just literally throw everything in there. They throw everything. They take risks. And this is now the effect of that. Because when it comes off, remember, high risk, high reward, but also high risk has its downfall. When it comes off, it looks great and everyone applauds them and say, yeah, well done. But the question that stands is, what if you find a team that's going to disrupt it, what we call it, continuation? And then now, are you able to switch between games and go back to your structure where you can actually use your dominant forwards, because like you said, they have dominant forwards. So for me, that's the one disappointing thing, is that they can't do that. They keep on forcing it. Fellow yesterday tweeted something about the Stormers are trying to force everything. And I'm like, but that's their DNA. That's what we've known all along. But when it comes off, no one talks about it. And that's the sad part, is that when a team is winning, no one sees the cracks within the team. But when the team starts to being found out, and then everyone, the small things, they've been doing this. That's how they won the URC in the first year. That's how they got to the final the second year, because of that kind of play. But now the question that comes in now, like Hugh has said, Dobbo has to answer, because why can't he change between the two setups? If he sees that his boys are not on this time this week, why can't he change it and go back to something simple and use the forwards and grind them out? So that's the questions. And yeah, I mean, credit to Aspers. They delivered the perfect plan for them, and they executed it. They disrupted them. They made sure that they were not settled in their game plan. And that's how they got out with the win.
Well, Jade, talk to me.
Yeah, you know what? There was a Welsh guy on X that, you know, he said it. I think you retweeted it, and he actually was spot on. He said that the Stormers, for the last few weeks, have been playing bad, and their megastars, their big names, have been bailing them out, like your Damien Willemser or your Manny Lepox, you know, have been bailing them out and winning the game for them. And that's actually, you know, if you look at the game last night, that's... Last night, they didn't have that bailout, you know, because Osprey's middle of the game. I mean, there's no way on paper that even regardless with the team that the Stormers put out there, I mean, there was a few guys missing. But the Stormers should have still won the game at the Cape Town Stadium. They should have still walked the game, you know. But, I mean, I'm not going to go too much on the Stormers. I said, I mean, you and Vuyo both said it. I'm just going to give praise to Ospreys. I mean... surely it must be that cheetah connection at the Ospreys, you know, getting them another step up there. I mean, you looked at Victor Sikikete and Jean-André Rudolph and all of those guys there. I mean, so it's a team close to our heart in Bloemfontein at the moment. But yeah, I mean, you look at Nicky Smith. I mean, the work that he done at prop yesterday. I mean, the captain, Morgan Morris, the seven flank. They were outstanding yesterday, and they stuck to their guns. They stuck to their game plan. If things didn't come off, they went back and they tried it again, and eventually they got the win. I'm not sure where they'll end up on the log. I mean, it will be close, like we said, but, you know, let's give them credit. I mean, for a Welsh team with everything that went on in Welsh rugby this year, Gatland and everything. I mean, if you look at the Dragons and Scarlins and Cardiff, where they are on the log, for the Ospreys to come and do this in South Africa, is really, really good for the competition and is good for Welsh rugby. So I think, you know, let's give them credit for it. Well done to them.
That is very true. Looking at everything that's happening in Wales at the moment, rugby aspect, this is really a good win for Welsh footy, to be honest. Jen, speaking about the Stormers, obviously Sasha Mgomezulu has signed a new contract extension, and there's been murmurs on the timeline about Sasha versus Lebog, and Sasha being the next in line to take over Andre Pollard. I mean, Lebog is also not that old, but I mean... The comments seem to be in favor of Sasha at the moment to take over or to leapfrog Manny Lebok into that Springbok 10 jersey. Jade, what are your thoughts on this?
How much gain does Sasha play the 10 for the Stormers? So yeah, how exactly can we judge? How can we judge him, you know, as a 10? I mean, we had this conversation a few weeks ago where Vuyo stated that, well, Sasha is definitely going to be in the box squad. He'll be in the setup, but where? Is he going to play 12? Is he going to play 10? What is he going to do? Where is he going to play? Is he going to be the similar guy like the way they've groomed in Damien Willemser and, you know, found his best position in the team? Eventually, easier 12, easier 10. Listen, in terms of raw talent, in terms of ceiling, I mean, I believe Manny Lebok has reached his ceiling at the moment. So I believe this is Manny Lebok. This is what he is. He might improve his kicking. He might improve, you know, certain aspects and stuff. But I believe that, you know, in terms of his player development in where he is, I think, listen, you know, Manny Lebok is a quality 10. But I still think that Sasha can be better. But we need to see him at 10. We can't judge him and say, now, listen, who's better between Manny and Sasha? I haven't seen Sasha at 10. So yeah. I can't answer you.
Yeah, fair enough. Before Vuyo and Hugh jump in, I see their hands are up. They are eager to share their voice. But, I mean, how often did we see Andre Pollard before he jumped into the Springbok setup at 10?
No, fair enough.
At Tux. We saw a lot of him in the SA under junior structures in the under 20s. And I think a year or two, he got injured a few times and he didn't play a lot of rugby, but he was already in the mix, in the setup at a very young age as well in the Springbok setup. But look how much he has developed over the years to become the fly-off that he is today. So can we not say the same thing about Sasha? in this current setup, in this current environment, where he can be brought in at a very young age. He's already been in one of the two alignment camps. But yeah, but can we also then maybe say, yeah, well, there is a possibility, even though Mani Lebok, obviously, he's playing good rugby for the Stormers. Yes, there's an element of the kicking debate about Lebok's game, but everything else we're not really concerned about. He's good on D, he's good on attack. He really basically gives good territory for his team. He's got a very good boot in that regard. But his game, he's a complete flower. Maybe just tweak a bit of kicking, but he's got the minerals to be a good 10 for the Springboks as well. But now the conversation is around Sasha basically leapfrogging him. Okay, Vuyo, you going to jump in, and then Hugh, you can take over after that.
Yeah, look, we're talking about, he's just signed another contract with the Stormers to take him till 2027. And then yet, Mani Lebok is still within the same province. So the question that we have to ask ourselves, what are we doing? Is we're talking about him being the next 10 of the Springboks, but he's sitting bench most of the time and is not even in the starting 15. So when is he going to get experience? Is he going to get experience at Bok level? At Bok level, how can you get experience with Andre Pollard and you've got Mani Lebok, same guys from within the system? So for me, this is why I said we need to have centralized contracting so that SARU can dictate where the player must go. Because think about it now. If SARU decided, if SARU had the contract of Sasha, they had the contract with Sasha's contract. So they will say, okay, we see that you guys have Mani Lebok, our number 210. So let's move Sasha maybe to the Lions, or to the Lions have just lost the 10. And maybe let's move him to the Lions, or we can move him to the Bulls, where we know that he's going to get game time, he's going to start. We're going to have a relationship with those two provinces where we want him to be there. Then he would get the experience we need for the national team. But at the moment, if you guys are telling us that he's number three in the world, he's number three in South Africa, he's not even going to he's going to remain at number three, because he can't leapfrog Mani Lebok unless you're telling me that Mani Lebok is going to be dropped from being the number 10 of the Stormers. So so for me it's a matter of we just say things out of the not even thinking about what exactly are we meaning with these things and what do we want to achieve with these things. Because for me, as I said, he should have never signed that extension. SARU should have stepped in and said, listen, just lost the 10. They play Nohamba at 10. Let's go and put Sasha with Nohamba at 9. Let's see how that combination is. The forwards of the Lions are actually not bad.
Oh my God, I would watch that. Wow.
Yeah, they're stepping up. They're stepping up. The forwards are stepping up. Yes, if you want maybe a bigger pack who's going to be driving first, then you will send him to the Bulls. And he will be in the starting lineup with Ambrose Pabio, who's playing brilliantly. So for me, it's just a matter of, I don't know why we would say that. But then the actions are not talking about the plan.
Yeah. Very good points there, Vuyo. Hugh.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Jade said about... Vuyo talking about Sasha going to either the Bulls or the Lions. I can't stop thinking about that now. That would be amazing. But Jade's talking about how many games he's played at 10 for Stormers. Correct, he's been playing 12. However, he's been wearing 12 on his back, but he's been playing 10 and 12. Like, when Sasha is playing 12, the Stormers might as well just buy, like, a scarecrow or a doll and dress it in a 10 jersey, because it doesn't matter who's playing 10 if Sasha's at 12. Sasha's doing everything. His passing, his kicking. He's the guy who's running the show. I agree 100% with what Jade said about, I think this is Mani Lebok. This is Mani Lebok at his level. And I think that Sasha, based on the limited amount that I've seen, has the potential to go to the level above. So I was talking to commentator Dave Rogers a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me about when he researches South African teams, he's got a South African contact who he rings up and checks the pronunciations of the names and things like that. And he told me the story that he was doing research on the Stormers, And the guy's talking him through the Stormers team sheet. So he's like, Avicii Diamani, Werchel Lanz, Ben Lauder. And then he gets to Sasha and he goes, Sasha Feinberg and Gomezulu. What a fucking player this kid is, by the way. And then keeps telling him the rest of the team sheet. So I think, like, we all believe that Sasha is going to be the guy. But I agree with what Vuyu said. He's kind of like stuck in a log jam at the moment that needs to be unplugged for him to get through. Just on getting people in maybe a bit early, didn't Caden Moody play 13 for the box after only playing there like twice for the Bulls or something like that? Have I got that wrong? But he came in quite early at that stage as well. So maybe Razzie's just
only played at high school 13, yeah.
Okay, so maybe Razzie's just going to go, chuck him in. If he's good enough, he's old enough.
Jade?
Yeah, now look, to end this off, you know, we have to also consider this, that Sasha's also been struggling with a few niggles this season. I mean, he's had his fair share of injuries, so we need to look at his development and see what, you know, is he going to be that kind of player that has a, you know, the odd niggle here or there. Look at his conditioning as well, you know. So we have to look at all of that aspect before we throw him in. And the other thing that, like Vuyo said, of Sasha going to the Bulls. I mean, can you imagine Sasha kicking a penalty over the Bulls and then playing Liflung for him? How awesome would that be?
Jade, you're on fire today, my friend. All right, gents, one final topic that's making its rounds. This one exploded on social media. Jordy Barrett at Leinster. A lot of people have been sharing their views, their opinion. Hugh, we're going to start off with you on this one. The Irish fans have already been complaining. Obviously, some Irish fans complaining that it's unfair that Leinster has all this money and buying all the marquee players from overseas, from abroad, taking up space for the developing kids that are coming through the structure or coming through the system. I mean, what are your thoughts regarding these comments from Irish fans regarding the Jordy Barrett short sabbatical acquisition, 6-month tenure thing that they've signed with him?
Yeah, I don't see a 6-month contract as blocking the pathways, and Leinster have got the best pathway in the world. You see, I think the URC CEO cited this as well. Leinster, you see a kid make his debut for Leinster in the URC in October, and he's playing for Ireland on the summer tour by July. So that's how quick Leinster's throughput of kids is. I've got no problem with it. Like, you look at the Leinster team, assuming they get Tupou, that will be their 3 non-Irish qualified players. Tupou, Barrett and Snyman. That's only 3 players out of 23. It's not the end of the world. And you have to say, like, Leinster develop the players. The reason Leinster have got so many centrally contracted players is because they developed them. And you can't argue. So if it was a French team, no one would say anything. If it was a Japanese team, no one would say anything. The problem that people in Ireland have is that it's just coming from the same pot of money for everybody. So Leinster's money, Munster's money, Connacht's money, Ulster's money all theoretically comes from the same place. I know it's not quite that simple, but yeah, for me, I don't have a problem with it. A big superstar on a 6-month contract, there's bigger fish to fry, I think. And look, Munster are the reigning champions of the URC, so I'm not sure what the problem is.
Yeah, true. Fair enough. Jade, an All Black all the way in Ireland for 6 months. How do you feel about this transition?
Well, you know, I saw it and I saw the news and like, oh, you know, why has he gone there? But then I thought about him like, what a good move for him as a player. I'm not going to talk about, you know, you covered everything, the aspects of what's going on in Ireland with their politics internally between Munster, Leinster, and Ulster and those guys. I'm going to touch on Jordy Barrett and, you know, for him as a player, what this means. I mean, All Blacks has been there. I mean, we had Bowden Barrett and you had Ori Savia taking sabbaticals this year. Next year, I think it's Rico and Jordy Barrett that's taking their sabbaticals. And Rico's going to Japan. He's going to Ireland. He's going to improve his game. he's going to learn so much at 12 or wherever they use him. He'll learn so much. And he's going to come back a better player, you know. So for me, I would love to see if New Zealand players do take a sabbatical, maybe move over to Ireland or move over to the top 14 instead of Japan, you know, for a few months and go and learn. Go and see the ins and outs, because let's look at it. Ireland are very successful and a strong rugby team at the moment. And Lens is arguably one of the best clubs, or if not the best club at the moment in the world. So he's going to learn so much from this. He's going to learn so much from Jacques Nama in terms of his defense as a 12. And the other thing is, if we look at him where he is as a player now, as a player, he's maturing. So he surely, Scoop, is in conversation in terms of the leadership for the All Blacks. I mean, he will be in that leadership group now. He's the good chance, the case that he might be one of the vice captains in that team, you know. So I think it's an awesome, awesome move for him. Go and freshen up, go and learn the game, come back a stronger player. Yeah, so for me, I mean, it's a good move for Jordy Barrett and a good move for New Zealand rugby. Better to go to Leinster than go to, what's it, Suntory or, you know, Panasonic or somebody like that.
Vuyo, yes, you can go ahead.
No, I just wanted to share some points that I've noticed since I've been coaching in Europe for some years. Jade is spot on. This is definitely very good for Jordy Barrett. I think Jordy will obviously improve his game going forward. I think he'll come back as a different player. But what most I've noticed about the players, about the teams or the structures in Europe is that they get these hybrid players because they looking at how that player can impart knowledge to their own. And I think with Leinster having that academy, with Leinster having, a pretty solid base with the Irish team, I think they probably also looking at someone who's just going to come in and have a different mindset and just have a different mindset of how things are done differently in everywhere else. Japan has done that, but I think Japan is also one or two things. But we haven't seen it a lot from Irish rugby, but we've seen it a lot from, for example, from English clubs where they've gotten. I think Saracens did it quite a lot with the guys like Skalkberger. What the hooker's name, Skalkbritz. They've done it a lot with just how they're getting these guys in that will actually just boost the team a little bit and obviously give their different mindset to things and whatever they've learned. So I think we have to also commend Leinster on this part and say well done to them for actually recognizing that maybe they need some of that to just come and do a little bit of obviously knowledge sharing within their juniors, especially their junior team, their youngsters going into a national team.
No, fair. I think you guys are 100% spot on this particular one. Obviously, the other politics that are regarding this particular element in Ireland, those are for the Irish people to sort out. But it's a very good move for Jordy Barrett. It's a very good move for Leinster as well. Knowledge sharing, Vuyo, you've touched on that. I think Jordy Barrett as well will gain some intel, maybe also increase some of his rugby IQ in maybe other elements where he was lacking. And coming back from this 6-month sabbatical, will be very good for him and his future rugby career. Any final thoughts from you guys over this past weekend regarding the football? You can share your thoughts now, gents. And other than that, we've got other news. Obviously, Ken Owens, who announced his retirement this week, a very prominent Welsh player. We've got Siya Kolisi, who was named amongst the innovators, top 100 innovators by Time magazine. That's a very good achievement. One of the best achievements that Siya Kolisi has had, obviously, over the time. A very influential captain. And we don't know how far his captaincy will go, with a lot of murmurs going around, but it's not 100% sure. We're not 100% sure whether he will still be captain, but I think he'll still be captain until Rassie decides, well, maybe we're looking for somebody more local, South Africa local, that's what I mean, to take over. Vickers, final thoughts?
No, I think, look, Sia has always been there. I mean, Sia for me, his life changed immediately the day he met Rassie Erasmus in 2010. I think just it's incredible. A lot of people, once you get to know the person, you get to understand what kind of person it is. And a lot of people will see him outside that and they'll make their judgments. And but I think for me, since I know the guy personally, I think that's this is probably one of the things that I would have expected from him, especially knowing a little bit more about his personal life as well. When you look at things like Welsh player, the Ken Owens retiring, I mean, it's sad that things like this come to an end, but sometimes, you know, we just need to understand that the players go through a lot, guys. They go through a lot mentally. They go through a lot. The pressures of high-class rugby is amazing. It's amazing how the small things that you used to do as a player and as a kid, just sitting with your parents and having fun on a Sunday, those things become a little bit more stressful now because you know that you have to approach the weeks. So yeah, but other than that, in terms of the news, I haven't seen much, but looking at forward to the last episode of Chasing the Sun today.
Hugh, your final thoughts for the weekend?
Just I'm looking so forward so much to the running of the season across all the leagues. The top 14 is fascinating as well. So if anybody, I know it's not the easiest to watch in South Africa, but if anybody does get a chance to watch the top 14, please do. And just strap in for the end of the URC. It's going to be crazy. We're going to be 10 minutes from the end of the final games on the final day of the regular season, not knowing what positions everyone's going to finish in. I can't wait.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting back end of the season for URC, definitely. So these next 2 to 3 weeks are going to be very, very important as to who will be in the playoffs. Jade, your final thoughts?
Shameless Aikies tomorrow, guys. Shameless Aikies Fosty Cup final in Bloemfontein, 500 meters from my house. So I'll buy bread tomorrow and come back full. 4 or 5 hours later. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that tomorrow. I mean, a guy to watch out for, Coach Malusi in South Africa. He's coaching at the Shimlas now, the defense and backline coach. He's done a tremendous job wherever he went. He was at Griquas, he was at CUT. Really, really keep an eye out for Malusi. And I'm interested to see how he climbs the ladder as a coach. You know, I made a bold prediction this week and I told a few guys that, you know, I think in a few years' time, Malusi has the temperament to coach one of the top teams in South Africa. I think in 4 or 5 years' time, we'll see him. And the other thing, Vuyo, while you got your hand up, bro, I saw a photo with you wearing 5 jackets. So when you come to South Africa, can we get one?
Yeah, mate. You know, we'll have to look at that. We'll have to try and do something there. But, you know, I just wanted to chat about what you were saying earlier on Scoop about Ackermann looking to come back to South Africa. I think, for example, a team like the Cheetahs should be looking at a guy like Ackermann. Surely that should be one of the guys that they can gun. But, you know, obviously we all know how it is in rugby circles within South Africa. But I think if I would love just to go to the Cheetahs, and obviously just give some knowledge and Ruan Pina can become his assistant. And then obviously within the few years and stuff, maybe Ruan we can see him not straight from playing into being head coach, but from being an assistant to someone who's got the experience.
All right. No, fair enough. Maybe Vickers, we can throw in your CV there with Ruan Pina as well. Maybe it would be a good time to see you back in the central.
Because remember, it's grey first and then the Cheetahs. So we'll have to see how much money the Cheetahs has left after the grey budget, and then we can decide if we can get Ackermann on the side.
Fair enough. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Once again, it's been a great chat. Obviously, see you guys next week and have a great Sunday and have a great week ahead, gents, and enjoy the rugby and the banter on Twitter. Bye.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys. Thank you. Ciao.
Hey there.